We want to break those fissures wider, and public pressure is what can do that. We know from our experience with other issues that people pressure makes a big difference.
All right.
That's Kevin Zeiss there with Margaret Flowers camping out in front of the FCC till the 15th of May, unless maybe they'll back off in advance with the major internet companies. Of course, Wheeler, the head of the FCC, got awards from both telecom and the cable company. Apparently that was his Bo Jackson credentials. That's who he represents, too. Anyway, if you haven't called or written the FCC, you can still do it. They haven't actually announced, he only characterized what he was going to offer as saving net neutrality, when actually it's absolutely the reverse. It's time to go. Call in from over at the demo. Bruce Rauner is in town for Republican Lincoln Day event. Neil and Kirby. You'll follow the noise in the crowd. You'll get there.
Yes, there's people out there. both on Kirby Avenue and Neal Street. Well, and a few people went by honking and giving them a thumbs up and stuff like that.
I'll be doing at least that, and maybe I'll stop in for a while.
Yeah, and, quite a few signs out there.
Join the great unwashed, you know, the third of democracy.
Yeah, a lot of signs dealing with labor. Labor issues there and stuff. So,
I haven't yet. I guess I'm speaking for myself. That's enough. I'll end with a self-deprecating remark. Thanks again for listening.
Welcome, folks, to another edition of the World Labor Hour, brought to you on the air by listener-supported community radio station WFT, broadcasting at 90.1 FM from Champaign, Illinois, and webcasting live worldwide at weft.org. Views and opinions expressed here, those of speakers, and do not necessarily represent those of the station manager, board of directors, or Prairie Air Incorporated. Now, here's Bob with some underwriting announcements.
This hour of programming is brought to you in part by Central Illinois Jobs with Justice, a coalition of union and community groups working for economic justice and workers' rights. Central Illinois Jobs with Justice holds regular meetings on the third Saturday of every month. For more information or for the unemployed and underemployed helpline, give them a call at 217-328-2295. The Illinois World Labor Hour is supported in part by the listeners of WEFT and by the AFL-CIO of Champaign County. The AFL-CIO represents the interests of more than 7,000 workers in Champaign County and more than 13 million workers nationwide. Recognizing that strong workers build strong communities, the AFL-CIO is proud to support community radio in East Central Illinois. Programming on the World Labor Hour is supported in part by the listeners of WEFT and by the Illinois Education Association Union. The Illinois Education Association's mission is to effect excellence and equity in public education and to be the advocacy organization for all public education employees. Programming on the World Labor Hour is supported in part by the listeners of WEFT and Decatur attorney Bill Faber. He believes that the mission of the law is the safety of the people. Bill Faber proudly supports the World Labor Hour and the Graduate Employees Organization Union, GEO, at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign strives to not only democratically represent graduate employees, but also to give solidarity and support to other unions, organizations, and workers engaged in the struggle for social justice both on and off campus. The GEO is proud to support the World Labor Hour on WEFT Community Radio. And a quick note here that World Harvest International and Gourmet Foods is a proud supporter of the News from Neptune Hour. So,
yeah, Paul wasn't quite able to squeeze that in, and he had a good program today. He had a lot of, packed a lot of stuff in there, a lot of good information. Just want to let you know, we're going to have an interesting show today. I just came from the labor rally outside of the Paris Hilton, Hilton Gardens Hotel on the corner of Kirby and Neal. A couple hundred union people out there protesting right-wing Republican gubernatorial candidate Bruce Rauners, Rainer, however you pronunciate his last name, Reamer, who's been invited here by the local Republican Party to talk. So they're out to protest him because this guy is bad as Pat Quinn is. And you rarely hear me say this, as bad as Pat Quinn has been. This Bruce Rauner guy is just really, really bad news.
He's got some interesting ideas about unions and pensions.
And take me back to the Middle Ages.
Yeah, he's kind of a Scott Walker devotee in some respects, isn't he?
Indeed. Yeah. And so anyway, at 11:15, Carol Ammons is going to be calling in live with a live report from there. And Bob and I are going to try to get in some quick news stories here. And then half past the hour, Judith Ansel will be calling in from Kansas City. And she's basically the host of the Heartland Labor Forum radio program that's out of the University of Missouri, Kansas City. So good program today, so stay tuned, and I guess we'll kick off some news stories with Bob.
Yeah, Paul mentioned May 15th as an important date, and it just happens that the fast food worker strike is about to go global, and they've picked May 15th as a date to do this. So
okay.
Workers from dozens of countries on six continents are joining the push for higher pay and worker rights. It was announced Wednesday at a press conference outside a McDonald's restaurant in Midtown Manhattan by Fast Food Forward, which represents U.S. fast food workers. The group announced a nationwide strike plans for May 15th, a date which mirrors the $15 per hour pay that they are demanding. On that same date, workers from dozens of countries on six continents will hold protests at McDonald's, Burger King's, and KFC outlets. It's not known how many workers will strike, but thousands of the nation's estimated 4 million fast food workers are expected to take part in the one-day strike. About 80% of McDonald's global restaurants are independently owned and operated by small business owners. But anyway, we'll go on here and we'll talk about a couple things here. Low-wage jobs are the fastest-growing occupations in the country, with the number of workers being paid minimum wage increasing tenfold over the past 6 years.
Wow.
Yeah. The purchasing power of the minimum wage workers is 26% lower than it was in 1970.
Huh.
So if you were getting minimum wage in 1970 and 40 years later, if you're getting minimum wage, you're getting 26% less because you can't hardly purchase anything. So,
and we know that to be a case, Bob, from our own personal experiences, considering our age. Remember back in the early 70s, early mid-70s, you could, you know, a guy right out of high school, girl right out of high school could have a minimum wage job and still afford to have an apartment and a decent car.
I was just thinking of something. I saw the guy walking with the gas can back from the gas station this morning because he's got to go fill up his lawnmower. And I was just thinking, he used to be able to go up there with 50 cents or a dollar in your pocket, get enough gas to run your lawnmower for a month or two.
Mm-hmm.
Not anymore. You got to take like a $5 bill up there to get enough gas to even mow your lawn for a week, you know.
Indeed.
So times have changed.
But for the worse, unfortunately.
Anyway, yeah, this fast food strike is going on May 15th at McDonald's, Burger King and KFC outlets. So if you support some of these people that are looking for a little bit more help with minimum wage, maybe you can drive past those restaurants on that day and make sure you don't cross any picket lines.
That's right. That's good news to hear that it's actually going global. I mean, wow, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, let me see if I can find it here. In the U.S., strikes are expected first to walkouts in Philadelphia, Sacramento, Miami, Orlando. Outside the U.S., the protests are expected to include protests in Africa, Asia, Australia, Europe, South America, and Central America. And it says some of the foreign protesters say they're taking action specifically in sympathy with the U.S. workers. Here's a lady, is a McDonald's worker in Denmark, says she makes $21 an hour. So you can do this,
yes,
and still have a profitable business,
mm-hmm,
you know?
Yep.
She says she was surprised to hear U.S. workers have to fight so hard to make $15 an hour and says she's committed to supporting their cause. So these are people in Denmark that are going to walk out and support. And they're making good money there,
mm-hmm,
but they believe that the U.S. workers are getting screwed.
Yeah, so I mean, granted, prices are a little higher in Denmark and Germany, but and taxes are a little higher. But the thing is that still, comparatively speaking, people making $21 in Germany or Denmark get free health care. I mean, it's health care paid through their taxes, all sorts of other great services, and they are a lot better off. I mean, even with those things into consideration.
Australia, I think, is another country where fast food workers make like $18 or $21 an hour. And you're right, there are some differences in, you know, monetary exchanges, mm-hmm, and things like that. But mm-hmm, it can be done.
Indeed.
It certainly
indeed
can be done.
That's great. Great story, Bob. A new study finds that the Affordable Care Act, otherwise known as Obamacare, will save corporate America $3.25 trillion through 2025, largely through ending employer-sponsored health care and shifting health care insurance costs to workers and their families. Research from Standard & Poor's Capital IQ Global Markets Intelligence, a financial information division of Standard & Poor's, finds that the Affordable Care Act presents an opportunity for U.S. corporations to radically redefine the role they play in the healthcare system. The study is a stark demonstration of the pro-corporate character of the Obama administration's healthcare bill. GMI's Market Intellect report estimates the Standard & Poor's 500 companies stand to save nearly $700 billion through 2025 as a result of the ACA, or about 4% of these companies' current market capitalization. Using a proprietary model, GMI projects that U.S. businesses as a whole could save $3.25 trillion over the same time period. GMI notes that the Affordable Care Act may eventually come to be historically recognized as a starting point of the reconstruction of the U.S. healthcare benefit industry and a catalyst for how companies provide healthcare insurance for their employees. The study likens this vast shift to the employer's migration in recent decades away from providing defined pension benefits in favor of IRAs and 401k plans. Corporate research group recognizes that any drastic change to the employer-provided health care benefits, the way the majority of the workers or families are currently insured, would likely be frowned upon by employees and the voting public at large. They predict, however, that once a few high-profile companies depart from their traditional approach to health benefits, others will quickly follow suit. They cite approvingly the September 2013 announcement by IBM that it planned to move about 110,000 retirees off its company-sponsored health plan, offering them instead a fixed stipend amount of money to purchase health insurance on a private health care exchange.
Hmm.
GMI also notes the decision by United Parcel Service to drop health coverage for the working spouses of its non-union workers. According to the report, the Obamacare health insurance exchanges present the opportunity for employers to distance themselves from health care. Okay, it looks like we got a caller calling in, and we'll take that now. Hello, WFT. We're on the air. Who am I speaking to?
Good morning.
Is this Carol Emmons?
It is Carol. This is Carol calling in from Kirby and Neal Street at the right, the workers' protest of Mr. Rauner to Champaign, Urbana.
Okay. So how many people are out there today, Carol?
We got about 100 folks out here who are holding signs and giving the message clearly that the unions and their families do not want Rauner in Illinois.
Okay. Yeah, this guy, you know, as bad as Pat Quinn has been, you know, this guy's, he sounds like really bad news. And, in fact, my co-host was just comparing him to potential Scott Walker in Wisconsin.
I'm told here today that at a speech that, unfortunately, he was the keynote speaker at, that he said that those two people are his mentors.
Mentors.
That's dangerous for Illinois and Illinois families.
Yes.
Yes, indeed. Yes, and so has anybody seen him or his entourage, or are they sneaking in the back door as usual?
I think there might be some sneaking in the back door going on. There's a few folks coming in at this point that are regular folks coming to see him, but it ain't a large crowd out here for him, I can tell you that. Those who are out here protesting his visit is larger than what we've seen going in so far.
Okay, so what are some of the local unions out there in the rally?
We have the plumbers and pipe fitters who are here, IBEW, the Laborers for America, UA 149, SEIU, the GEO. Let's see who else is here. The Teachers Union, Champaign Teachers Union is here. Let's see. I think the Teamsters have a few folks out here. The building trades, all the building trades are here represented. And it's a good thing for all the unions to come together to work in concert for this and to let people know how bad Rauner is for Illinois, for education, for workers' rights, protecting our families. There's Rauner alerts going on here on Kirby and Neal.
Well, that's great, Carol. And it's just really, you know, inspiring that someone like you, who's a representative for state, you know, basically a candidate for state rep, is willing to, you know, take time out of their weekend to go out there and show solidarity, you know, with fellow union members and workers and stuff. I mean, of course, anyone who knows you isn't surprised about that, but still, it's kind of unusual, you know, for, you know, the norm. Let's put it that way.
Well, we can't do things the way we used to do, and they're not normal. We are really in a position in Illinois that we got to, unfortunately, make the hard decisions, but we don't want a governor in our state that would dismantle services for the poorest of the poor, for the working families. As a state representative, I think it's my duty to be here in support of the families of Champaign-Urbana and for us to be very, very clear about the kind of leadership that we got to have in Illinois. We have to have people's rights protected. We have to have resources for the poorest of the poor. And unfortunately, the candidate who's running on the Republican side does not have a history of protecting the rights of those people.
Yes, when I was checking out his website, I mean, looking at the issues he's running on, and it's just, I mean, incredible. I mean, that this guy is so brazen and bold as far as, you know, what he wants to do to working people and working families here and in the state.
I think that's what prompted over 100 people to come out this morning on a Saturday morning where they could be doing a lot of things, but to come out and try to send a clear message that that type of politics is not welcome in Illinois and is not good for Champaign-Urbana, and we want to stand in solidarity with people throughout this state sending the same message that we cannot afford the kind of leadership that Mr. Rauner is trying to bring to Illinois.
Well, Carol, thank you so much for calling and giving us this live update, and both the unions of Champaign-Urbana and you yourself are a real inspiration. So thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you. Thank you for giving me a few minutes. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Yes.
Okay, that was Carol Ammons, who is a candidate for state rep of the Democratic Party, and she's called in live from a labor rally outside the Paris, I'm sorry, the Hilton Gardens Hotel there on Kirby and Neal against Republican gubernatorial candidate Bruce Rauner. So anyway, I wanted to, we got a few minutes here before our guest calls in. I just wanted to real quick finish this article for Standard & Poor's. I mean, you know, a lot of people were under the impression that when the Affordable Care Act was first introduced, it's also known as Obamacare, that the intent of it was to help people have health insurance coverage, health care coverage through health insurance. And I was always a skeptic because, you know, I kind of saw through this right off the get-go. I mean, I wasn't, let's put it this way, I'm no genius or anything. It's just that, you know, you look at some of these politicians, regardless of who you're talking about, you know, they start to have an MO after a while. You know, when I first started seeing, you know, little elements of this Affordable Care Act plan, it started becoming clear to not just me, but lots of other people around the country that, you know, this is not, the intent of this is not to help people with their health care needs. This was an attempt to try to further privatize privatized health care industry in this country. And, you know, this article just really, you know, brings this to, you know, really even clearer, shows that that is definitely the case. Anyway, you know, the article kind of finishes up here. I just wanted to kind of summarize here towards the end that while the study notes in passing that employees purchasing coverage on the Obamacare exchanges will face higher deductibles and increased out-pocket expenses, it leaves unmentioned the reality that these costs will force workers to self-ration health care for themselves and their families, resulting in poor health outcomes and ultimately, in many cases, deaths, unnecessary deaths. And it's worthwhile to quote the concluding paragraph of the Market Intellect report in its entirety. It says, quote, "This analysis uniquely highlights the basic premise that corporations will deliberately and strategically devolve their participation in providing health care benefits for Americans, shifting the obligation towards individuals and government," in other words, the taxpayers. "Our intention, which this model approach tends to fulfill, is to provide investors with a distinctly practical, so-called practical view of how financial market forces may steer the evolution of the U.S. healthcare industry following the preliminary introduction of the Affordable Care Act." In other words, the design of the Affordable Care Act legislation has provided an opportunity for corporate America to effect a sea change in the way healthcare insurance has traditionally been provided to workers and their families in the U.S. And the shift will result in surging profits for big corporations while gutting healthcare for ordinary workers and their families. Okay, looks like our other caller is calling in here, so we'll take this call. Hello, WFT, you're on the air.
Hey, Dave, and everybody in the studio, it's Neil from Not Another Sports Show.
Yes, Neil, how you doing?
Yeah, did you see the Clippers got their new CEO?
No, Dick Parsons?
Yes, Dick Parsons,
yeah.
Gangster from Citigroup.
Yeah. That guy's had a checkered career, Dick Parsons. He was involved with music for many years, wasn't he? Didn't he work with like Stax Records or something like that many years ago and then kind of get involved with CBS Records or something? And
he was also involved in the savings and loan scandal.
Yes. Oh, really?
Yes.
Yes. And he was the former head of Citigroup when, you know, they paid out all those massive executive pay scales.
Yes.
For people who broke the economy.
So basically they went from a racist to checkered... I'm sorry, maybe I'm thinking the wrong thing here. I'm sorry, I'm really bad on sports.
No, checkered would be a good way to describe it, Dick Parsons. Yes.
Okay. Well, let's hear...
They go from an open racist to this guy. I just didn't know if you guys saw that yet.
No, we hadn't. I really appreciate you calling and updating. So what are you going to be talking about in your show today at 2 o'clock?
Oh, we will be talking about Dick Parsons and the fact that nobody's really talking about Dick Parsons. Some workers' issues... across the world in Brazil, and even outspoken cornerback of the Seattle Seahawks, Richard Sherman, saying that if Donald Sterling was an NFL owner, he didn't think the NFL would get rid of him because they still have the racist Washington, D.C. franchise name that they're refusing to get rid of.
Okay. Yeah, and then, of course, there's always the Florida Seminoles, but the Redskins, yeah, that's, you know, that's a bit much, for sure.
Yeah, and if any of you guys want to pop on over at 2 o'clock into the studio, you're more than welcome.
Okay, Neil. Well, thanks a lot. And that's Neil Parthen from Another Sports Show, which airs on WRFU 104.5 from 2 to 3 every Saturday and on Comcast Channel 6 on Wednesdays, I believe, at 6 p.m.
Thanks, Neil.
Thank you, Neil. Okay, that was Neil Parthen. And real quick, in conjunction with that story I just read, the Brotherhood of Locomotive Engineers Kentucky State Legislative Board has endorsed House Resolution 676, the National Single-Payer Healthcare Legislation introduced by Congressman John Conyers. The legislation is known as Expanded and Improved Medicare for All. The resolution affirms that the Brotherhood of Locomotive Engineers will work with other unions and community groups to build a groundswell of popular support and action for House Resolution 676 until we make what is morally right for our nation and what is politically possible. This is basically the Expanded and Improved Medicare for All Act, which is what should have been done instead of the Affordable Care Act in order to insure Americans. And what's interesting is that over 613 union organizations, including 147 central labor councils and area labor federations, and 44 state AFL-CIOs has endorsed the House Resolution 676, the expanded and improved Medicare for All bill. So anyway, we're waiting for our caller, Judith Ansel, to call in here in about 4 or 5 minutes. And Bob, do you have another labor story? Real quick?
I got a couple things, but okay. I kind of wanted to go back talking about governors again.
Oh, okay, please do.
I wanted to bring up Governor Rick Perry in Texas.
Oh,
who's been going around trying to steal jobs from other states, you know?
Really?
Oh, yeah. He's made these pitches. He's been going to states and telling factories and stuff and businesses you should move years to Texas. So actually last week, I guess maybe there was an announcement by Toyota that it was moving its U.S. headquarters from California to Texas. It says move from Torrance, California, a suburb of Los Angeles, to Plano, Texas, 25 miles north of Dallas, will add about 4,000 jobs in Texas. The company already employs about 3,000 Texas employees at a factory in San Antonio that makes trucks. So says is they're doing this partially because of a $40 million offer from the Texas Enterprise Fund, an economic development incentive funded by state taxpayers. And so the taxpayers are actually paying to help move this company there. But they're stealing these jobs from other states, actually. It says, you know, and this article here says the move is reminiscent of a similar change made by Nissan in 2006 when it transferred most of its American employees from California to Tennessee. Although I heard that a lot of the California people didn't move to Tennessee, and that a lot of the people that did move to Tennessee ended up going back to California because they didn't like it there.
Yeah, imagine but that.
It says here. It says here that they're going to actually take these jobs from a lot of different places. Toyota's move would affect 2,000 employees in its sales and marketing and corporate offices in California, as well as about 1,000 workers at an engineering center in Kentucky, and a smaller number of employees out of New York, you know. So this is just another instance where these corporate bailouts and subsidies, we talked about Boeing up there in Washington State and New York State offering subsidies to Alcoa and different companies, and they're turning around and just stealing these jobs from another state, you know. It's really kind of a race to the bottom.
Oh,
you know?
Indeed, yeah. I mean, it goes beyond Robin Peter to pay Paul. I mean, this is definitely another notch on the race to the bottom for sure, another notch down.
Hi, folks. This is Bill.
Hey, Bill.
I'm just back from the rally. Anyway, there may be an unintended consequence to this.
Which is?
Which is Rick Perry importing blue state voters.
Oh, hey, there you go. Yeah.
Okay. You see, that's, I mean, that's,
well, you know, there's a, that's part of this article states about the fact that they're trying to import middle class citizens, you know, people that are making $60,000, $70,000, $80,000. And so they're trying to import executive jobs,
mm-hmm.
not low wage jobs and low wage workers. So that's very interesting, Bill.
Yeah.
Well, I think there's been some people writing about this for the last couple of years with all the people have been moving to the Southwest out of, you know, the more
the
blue
Rust
areas
Belt
of the country.
And,
yeah. That things would be changing, plus immigration in
mm-hmm.
the Southwest, too.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay, before our caller calls in, I want to get a couple quick public service announcements in here. This coming Tuesday, May 13th at 5:30 at the Hilton Garden Inn, 1501 South Neal Street in Champaign, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency is holding a public hearing on the question of whether they should grant sole source aquifer protection to the Mahomet Aquifer. If they vote in favor, review of the protection, any future federally supported project that might affect the aquifer would require review by the agency. While this wouldn't directly require such a review of the proposal to store toxic PCBs in the Clinton land, Phil, the U.S. EPA is currently considering that question as well. This is an opportunity to show EPA officials we are concerned about the quality of our water. It could focus them on the question of the contents of this landfill in Clinton and provide us a safety mechanism against pollution in the future. So hope to see you there. That's this coming Tuesday, May 13th at 5:30 at the Hilton Garden Inn, corner of Neal and Kirby. And also coming up Monday, May 19th, in August 2012, South African police killed 34 striking platinum mine workers in Marikana, South Africa, and claimed that they acted in self-defense. Miners Shot Down tells a different story with compelling film footage and interviews with strike leaders and lawyers at the ensuing Commission of Inquiry into the massacre. What emerges is a tragedy that reveals the deep fault lines in South Africa's 20-year-old democracy of deepening inequality, violence, and unfulfilled promises of a better life for all. So join us for a public screening of this film, Miners Shot Down, and a debate and discussion hosted by Professor Ken Salo, who's originally from South Africa, who's been on the Labor Hour a couple times. And that'll be on Monday, May 19th from 6 to 9 p.m. at the Channing Murray Foundation at 1205 West Oregon, corner of Oregon and Matthews. And for more info, you can contact me at area code 217-721-0583. That's 721-0583. We're going to play some music here from Ann Feeney, and we'll be right back. We're waiting for our caller to call in. So stay tuned. You listen to the World Labor Hour on Listener Supported Community Radio Station WFT in Champaign, Illinois.
Right in our heartland and across the USA, these multinational bastards don't use tanks and guns, it's true, but they've declared a war on us. Fight back, it's up to you. Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers. And it's time we started calling the shots. Going to work could be the death of you and me, but we're not unarmed. Our weapon's solidarity. Jim Beals and Karen Silkwood, the list goes on and on. With every year that passes, 60,000 more gone. Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers. And it's time we started calling the shots. When they your copay.
War on the workers.
Don't you know what to say?
War on the workers.
When they talk privatization.
War on the workers.
And cooperation.
War on the workers.
When they call you a team.
War on the workers.
You better learn how to scream.
War on the workers.
Oh, that's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, give in. No more lies, no compromise. We'll battle till we win. Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers. And it's time we started calling the shots. When they talk flexibility.
War on the workers.
Every working stiff can see.
War on the workers.
Now when they poison your water. Don't go like lambs to the slaughter.
War on the workers.
And when they foul up the air.
War on the workers.
You gotta show that you care.
War on the workers.
When they talk WTO.
War on the workers.
You best be screaming hell no.
War on the workers.
Oh, that's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers. It's a war on public education. It's a war on child labor protection. It's a war on the 8-hour day. It's a war on occupational health and safety. It's a war on social security. Now thanks to WTO, GATT, NAFTA, MAI, the IMF, and the World Bank, it's a worldwide war. Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Yeah, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers. And it's time, sisters and brothers, you know it's time right now. I said it's time we started calling the shots.
Okay, that was Ann Feeney playing War on the Workers. And anyway, you know, it's interesting. Bill was just telling me that Ann Feeney, share this with the listeners, Bill.
Well, somebody who's involved with booking artists for the
CU Folk and Roots Festival.
Thank you, Bob. CU Folk and Roots Festival. I kept wanting to say jazz and blues for some reason.
Yeah.
Folk and Roots Festival is trying to get Ann Feeney. I hope it works out. It'd be really nice. But, you know, there's a lot of contingencies involved in things, like where you're going to be at the day before it.
Right. I think the last time Ann was in town, David Johnson brought her to the IMC.
Was that with Dave Rovics?
Oh, no, no, it wasn't with David Rovics, but that was a May Day celebration with Ann Feeney, and it was also with Paul Kottheimer, and there was a band of, he's involved with...
Oh, those three guys that were jamming?
Yeah, one of them was Isaiah Johnson, who's here on WFT.
Yeah, Mr. Sensation.
Mr. Sensation, yes, and he had a couple guys come in from Toledo, Ohio.
Yeah, he said, I love that, man.
Yeah.
Was he the guitar player?
Yes.
Oh, man, he was good.
Yeah, and this was a benefit for the locked out workers over in Indiana at, it was a musical company. It's a nationwide music company.
Selmer.
It could
they
be.
They made like trumpets and stuff like that. It was Selmer. I remember now.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Okay, but she was here since then playing at, I think, Gregory Hall in one of the large lecture rooms.
Yes, that's true.
With David Rovics.
Yes, that's true. Yes.
And terrible lighting for photography, too. It's just, some pictures look bad.
That'd be good to get Ann back in town.
Indeed. How's her? I mean, I know she was having some problems with cancer for a while. Has she got that under control?
Yeah, she seems to be really good. I haven't seen one of her newsletters for a few weeks, but last time she was talking about, you know, promoting her trip to Ireland.
Ah, okay.
She takes people on tours of Ireland, and I would imagine that going to Ireland with Ann Feeney would be one hell of a good time.
Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah.
So Ann's a pretty cool person. Geez, now I've been acquainted with her now for almost 20 years. Mm-hmm. Can't believe that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, just to think about it, I mean, you know, Ann's of Irish heritage, and of course, I'm sure that trip would involve not just a lot of music, but also a lot of probably some good labor and political history, too. You know?
Well, Dave, I don't know. Do you have any of the CDs that have the song, the sick, not the song, but the story, The Sick Note?
Yeah, I don't have that particular CD with me. I do have it at home.
I wish
though.
I could tell that story, man. It is so funny.
Yes.
And of course, I relate to it as a now former hod carrier.
Yeah. That's hard work, too.
Oh, man. I had to take it off the list, man. Last time I did it, it just about tore my shoulders up.
Mm-hmm. You know, I guess I'm hoping that Judith Ansel, you know, will call in here before the show's over. I know she's at a conference. I confirmed with her on email yesterday. So,
Dave, what's her topic? That name's familiar.
Well, basically, she's a radio host of the Heartland Labor Forum radio program out of Kansas City, Missouri.
Oh, okay.
And it's Kansas City's only radio show about the workplace. It's and the labor movement, and their theme is statement is a radio that talks back to the boss. And it's webcast, and it's a winner of an International Labor Communications Association Media Award in 2013. And it's on the air Thursdays from 6 to 7 p.m. and Fridays at 5 to 6 a.m. And you can just go and Google in Heartland Labor Forum, and the live streaming is at www.kkfi.org. And they've been on the air for 25 years. And it's a weekly one-hour radio show, broadcast twice a week. And it's basically dealing with economic issues on community radio in Kansas City and also worldwide. And it's interesting. You go to their website. I mean, it's pretty impressive, actually. I mean, they've got an archive there, their own archive, with the little synopsis of their past programs, even a little like either cartoon or a little graphic that they have up there. But see, their program is run out of the University of Missouri Kansas City's labor education department.
Well,
so they got
wondering,
a great budget and staff and everything.
Well,
else.
There's another thing too. They had an ILCA award.
Yes.
Okay. See, we can't even join the ILCA.
Why is that, Bill?
Because we are not a house organ for a labor organization.
Oh, I see. Okay.
You see, that's what it is. The ILCA is mainly the people that do the newsletters and stuff.
Ah, okay.
And as a matter of fact, gosh, this was probably at least 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'll dig this out someday, even though it's probably really noisy and crappy sounding. I did an interview with David Swanson.
Okay, that name sounds familiar.
Yes, after Downing Street.
Oh, yes.
A lot of anti-war activism.
Mm-hmm.
Well, David Swanson, as a young man, was director of the ILCA.
Oh, wow.
And I interviewed him, and I was really, really enthusiastic about it because he seemed like a very brilliant and motivated young man.
Okay. I think this might be Judith calling in. Let's take her call here. Hello, WFT. You're on the air.
Hi, this is Judy Ampa.
Hi, Judith. How you doing?
Okay, how are you?
Good, good. We were just talking a little about the Heartland Labor Forum here from what I got off your website, but why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself to the listeners?
Okay, my name is Judy Ansel, and I am director of the Worker Education and Labor Studies Program at University of Missouri, Kansas City. And one of the projects which we oversee is the Heartland Labor Forum, which is the labor radio show in Kansas City, and it's on 90.1 FM KKFI Community Radio in Kansas City. And we are celebrating our 25th anniversary on the air this year.
Well, that's
25 years of volunteer radio programmers producing of, by, and for labor.
Okay. Well, that's quite a coincidence. I didn't see your broadcast. I saw, of course, the webcast, KKFI.org, but 90.1 is the same what we transmit off of.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. We're at the left of the dial.
Yes, indeed. Indeed. So, yeah, so you've been on the show, you've been doing the show for 25 years and stuff, and I just kind of stumbled across, your website a while back, and I was just really impressed with it and everything. But two things I just found out today. We have a right-wing Republican gubernatorial candidate that's here in Champaign-Urbana today, and there's a huge labor rally in protest of him. And I found out from somebody from our labor education department here at the University of Illinois that you possibly going to be here in Champaign-Urbana for a women's summer camp conference.
Well, actually, I'm in Illinois as we speak.
Oh, okay.
Polk Women's Institute for Collective Bargaining. We've got about 35 union women here. We're in Grafton at the Pierre Marquette State Park, like a beautiful place.
Okay.
We've been doing 3 days of collective bargaining simulation, and they're bargaining a mock hotel contract from Springfield, Illinois. And they divide up into labor and management, and it's been really fun and exciting.
Oh, good.
These union women learn how to bargain. And yes, I am going to be teaching labor history at the Union Women's Summer School, the Midwest School for Women Workers in Champaign, which will be at the end of June.
Okay. Well, maybe when you're in town, we might be able to have you stop in if you got the time and stuff. But just tell us a little bit of how you guys got started 25 years ago.
We actually got started because it was the year that they opened up, started our community radio station, which was 1988. People from the community radio station asked several unions to help them with the build-out and the wiring for the station. And the president of the Labor Council at the time was a member of the IBEW, and the IBEW did a lot of work on it. And they offered labor a show because they were so appreciative of the great work they did. And so I had just hired in as director of labor education at my university. And the president of the Labor Council called me up and he says, hey, I want to take you out to lunch. I have a proposal. And little did I know that it would turn into this. But he asked me if I would coordinate the development of a radio show. And then we put a call out to the unions for people who were interested. And a bunch of people responded from all kinds of unions, UAW, machinists, government employees in particular. And we put together a group of people and we started doing radio first a half hour every week, and then after a couple of years we expanded and we moved to an hour. So we're on every Thursday evening at 6 p.m. Central Time. You can tune in because we live stream at kkfi.org, or you can get our archive shows if you go to heartlandlaborforum.org. Our first show was right in the middle of the Eastern Airlines strike against Frank Lorenzo, which was a real turning point in labor history.
Mm-hmm.
And we went out to the airport to cover the picket line, and it turned out that you know, like the union leader got arrested. So it was pretty exciting.
Yes, anytime a union leader gets arrested at a rally these days, or even back then, that's usually means that you're probably being effective.
Right. Well, this guy was great, and he ended up having a long career in labor. He just retired, as a matter of fact, from the state Fed. But it was an exciting show and an exciting kickoff.
Okay.
For many, many shows. I haven't even multiplied up. We've done an original show pretty much every week for 25 years.
You know, I was really...
All produced by volunteers.
Okay, I was going to say, I was really impressed with your archive of shows. You know, we here at a community radio station, with our programming, we have to upload it to radioforall.net. And I was just impressed how right on your website, I mean, you got your shows archived there with a little synopsis, and I was just really, really impressive.
Oh, thanks.
Yes.
Yeah.
But Libby, I ran into you up in Labor Notes, of course, back last month. And by the way, that was the first Labor Notes conference I ever attended, and I was just really, really impressed. I mean, it was just some really incredible, various workshops and talks, and of course Kashama Sawant from Seattle was there, and there was just a real interesting one, and I heard it broke a record, that it was like one of the largest
yeah,
ones.
Yeah, 2,000 people were there.
And I tell you, I what really enjoyed was I ran into a lot of just wonderful rank and file people, you know, and it was just so easy to start up conversations with people and then hear all these just phenomenal stories. I mean, I've got enough contact info, I think, for programming on our show for at least the next year on and off, you know. So
we did a show too on Labor Notes. We did it a couple weeks ago where we featured some of the speeches at the plenaries.
Mm-hmm.
And we had five people from Kansas City who were at Labor Notes, and we were all discussing, you know, what we saw and heard at the conference. It's a great subject for radio, actually.
Yes. Okay. So I was just looking, it looks like, I didn't bring it, but I thought I had printed out some of your upcoming programs coming up this in the next week or next month here. Could you just, do you know off the top of your head some of the...
No.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry, I don't want to put you on the spot.
And I don't have a schedule in front of me, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I can't even remember what next week is.
Okay.
I can't say that this last week we did a show where we had Kansas teachers talking about the state legislature's axing of our teacher tenure laws by taking away the right to due process, which is a catastrophe for K-12 teachers in Kansas.
Oh, wow.
And, right in line with the Koch brothers.
Yes.
Agenda and unfortunately, Governor Sam Brownback as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a hot topic right now.
Mm-hmm.
And then we did a book interview. We do a lot of book interviews on the show.
Mm-hmm.
We find good new books on subjects of labor. And this one was about... food workers, farm workers, who are working in the local food movement, and how we pay so much attention to, you know, all the reasons why we want to support local agriculture and the health reasons and the environmental reasons and anti-agribusiness reasons. But nobody's talking about the people who are actually working on those farms.
So
this is the book that actually studied New York State and looked at some rather exploitative conditions in New York, and we wanted to raise consciousness about it because we have a giant local food movement in Kansas City, and we think people need to know more, think more about this issue and the fact that it's real people who are working these farms. They may be young hippies who are idealistic, but they also deserve to have some justice on the job.
Well, sure, and a lot of them, have families too. You know, they're starting out
right.
And everything else. You know, you just reminded me of another reason. What really interested me in getting you on the show here was when I was going, of course, to checking out your website. Is noticing some of the past programs you've done. It seems like not only are you really comprehensive as far as your topics and how they, you know, you're not just focused on say what this union did this last month or yeah. Whatever, but you deal with issues affecting working people in general, and that can be, of course, of a huge, broad, variety of issues. But also, it seems like you've taken on some good controversial issues that maybe a lot of labor programs would shy away from. And so, Can you talk a little bit about that? I mean, obviously, I know we have done the same in the past, and we've had some little bit of controversy within the labor community for doing it. And I just found out today, too, speaking of that, was that you were the target. I remember when this happened, but I didn't connect it with you, was that that guy, that right-wing nut out there, that Andrew Birnbaum.
Andrew Breitbaum, yes.
Had, you know, did, went to that conference, got some video footage, and basically edited it to misrepresent what one of his participants was saying and stuff. And it just, I thought, oh, my God, that was her. So
that was me.
Yeah.
That was me. That was one of the scariest weeks of my life, I'll tell you. When, I mean, imagine what you know, when a major blog, it was called biggovernment.com, you know, puts up phony edited tapes of you, and it was a colleague of mine too, saying things that we were advocating all kinds of terrible things that unions do. And then the lieutenant governor of your state gets on talk radio and that you'd be fired. It's pretty scary.
Oh, yeah.
For a regular class, we thought. And you know, Brett, by that time, however, had, was famous for doctoring tapes.
Right.
And, you know, he's the guy who brought down Acorn.
Yes.
And then a Department of Agriculture employee named Shirley Sherrod. And he'd been exposed a couple of times already. And so, thank heaven, provost of my university was pretty skeptical, and she insisted on a thorough investigation. And they ended up... you know, finding that the tapes were in fact edited and that I had been basically slandered. Unfortunately, my colleague, we do interactive video courses with St. Louis, University of Missouri, St. Louis. My colleague didn't fare so well, and he got fired. And, but then we had a campaign, and he was reinstated.
Wow.
So
we got
came out okay.
Okay, we got a case here in town that just made it national on Fox News. There's a guy who's an adjunct professor at the University of Illinois named James Kilgore, and he back, you know, 40 some years ago was in the Siboney's Liberation Army, and yeah, and was part of a bank robbery in which a person was killed. He didn't kill the person, but he was there, you know, which made him an accessory. And he was a fugitive for, I think, 20-some years, was in South Africa for most of those years, and then came back to the United States and served some jail time for it and got out and got hired here at the University of Illinois a couple years ago. And they, you know, was forthcoming on his, you know, criminal record, his time served and stuff, and it was no problem, and he was hired. But then we had a real contentious state representative race here in the Democratic primary in which a local African-American woman who was a community activist who running against a well-funded corporate Democrat and actually beat him. And I guess our local conservative right-wing newspaper wanted to get to her, it seems, by going after him because he was part of the same organization that she was involved with, Champaign-Urbana Citizens for Peace and Justice. And so anyway, they did a four-page little you know, hit piece on this guy. And basically, he's in they're saying they're going to fire him and stuff. And there's been a bunch of people rallying to his support. And as of, I think it was just a day or two ago, that it made it onto Fox News about this terrorist person and stuff. But, I mean, it's just really horrible because right now the faculty, both adjuncts and tenured, are trying to organize a union on the University of Illinois campus. And if they had a union already, there's no way they could fire him. I mean, so this is kind of like a double issue, if you will, and stuff. So it's just interesting, the parallels here. But, yeah, they had to, I'm sure that was caused a lot of sleepless nights for you. It had to have been really, really stressful, that whole, you know, incident.
It was. It really was. And I really have to thank my colleagues in the labor education community, many of our unions as well, and our students for just really getting into action and just blitzing the university with support letters. That really makes a huge difference. Being part of a network of people who understand the implications when they attack somebody in order to pick them off to make their political point. Really important to have a network of support. And they swung into action, and they were the ones who really saved me.
That's great. That's
my
great.
Colleague. Yeah.
Okay. So just we're just got a few more minutes here. Just do you want to maybe mention a sort of a little bit about what you what do you see as the future for your program as well as maybe labor media in general in the United States?
Well, you know, for years, those of us who have who've done labor radio have been harping on the idea that the labor movement itself really needs alternative media, that we just don't get a fair shake from the commercial corporate media. They rarely cover any good stuff that labor does, and they don't go into any depth on working people's issues. I mean, they cover business great, but they just do not cover the workplace and in any kind of extensive way. But the alternative media does, and that's both, you know, labor media, programs like WIN, Workers Independent News, which is a daily news feed on labor news, and the many labor radio and some labor cable shows. These are really, really important, and we don't, I don't think, get enough support from the labor movement itself. And people need to tell people that this exists and, you know, give them the links and tell them to turn in and promote it, because we are doing journalism on these shows that is really vital for us to understand our own movement and for us to be able to communicate about what the, you know, in the great creativity of the labor movement is. And so, you know, I see a bright future for us, but we all need to support it.
Yes. Very well said. So I just want to remind, again, the listeners out there that if you want to tune in to the Heartland Labor Forum, it's on Thursdays from 6 to 7 p.m. Central Time and Fridays 5 to 6 a.m. Central Time at www.kkfi.org. So definitely tune in. And Judith, thank you so much for calling in. And when you're here in Champaign-Urbana, just maybe drop me an email or something right before you come into town. Maybe we could work something out. You could stop in. Pay us a short visit.
Okay, great. Thank you so much, David. It's really a delight.
Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure. Take care.
Uh-huh. Bye.
Bye.
Yeah, Dave. So
Okay, that was Ann Feeney there, both songs you heard. The first one was Whatever Happened to the 8-Hour Day, and then the last one you heard was Look to the Left on Your Radio Dial, and Bill Gorell came up with that song.
90.1.
Yes.
FM right. is on the left end of the dial.
Yeah, just like Judy Ansel's program in Kansas City is 90.1.
Most, all of your, you know why?
A lot of community radio stations are on that.
I'm not sure why FM, unless it's just following AM tradition.
Mm-hmm.
But you see, on the left end of the dial, it's like in this town, it's AM 580. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's your NPR station. All right, well, all of these wires running around here have current that goes at